tears on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, step by step, step by day, I'm on the run to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Good evening and welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. We're going to have Spencer come up and tell her joke.
Yeah. Hey, Spencer, alcoholic joke teller. Before I stopped drinking, I was no stranger to hospitals, and I gained a resentment with one of those pamphlets that they have out there while you're waiting for the doctor. I took a picture of it. It said, "You might have an alcohol problem if you keep an open drink tab on an airplane flight. The only other person who knows how much you really drink is your dog. You're sure you've seen this movie a few times but have no idea how it ends. You think other people have a problem when they look at you funny the next day. Your liquor run includes multiple stores so no one keeps score. Your favorite wine comes in a box. And you think you're the funniest person you know."
Thanks, Spencer. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is James. Thank you for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or distract people. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on this step study tonight. If everyone's ready, we're going to bring in the monks and dim the lights.
Please, Spirit,
say the fog light prayer. If you don't know, it's up on the screen here, and it's also on the yellow cards on the backs of the chairs. God,
let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me.
There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Ava to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. Please welcome up Ava.
Hi, Ava, alcoholic.
Hey, Ava.
The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Ava. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so turn your phone on airplane mode or silent. We have Peter here for his 9th session, 10th. I can't keep track. I apologize. But please welcome up Peter.
My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Peter.
Grateful to be alive and sober, part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And glad to be here. We had a great day today. We got a visit from our dear friend Ava from New York. Spent the day gossiping about everybody. No, I'm only kidding. Had a great day talking about lots of things and catching up. And I walk in and my friend Scott is here. And so it's been a great day seeing a lot of familiar folks every Thursday here. So we're in the far turn of this 12 weeks. It's unbelievable You start off in the first week, and you got a whole 11 weeks to go, and it's 3 months down the road. And you turn around, you're like wrapping up, headed for the far turn, and till the next guy comes in. So it's always fun to talk about the good news that was brought to me. June 23rd, 1988 is when a loving God separated me from alcohol. I'm very grateful to be a sober member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what, I've been through 7 treatment centers, and I'm sure when the H&I folks brought meetings into that treatment center, they would bring in the good news. I just wasn't hearing it. I was still operating out of the mind, and I was filtering everything through the mind. And the thing about my mind, even as I stand here tonight, it wants no part of recovery or God or solution. It likes drama. It wants a problem. You know, it wants to be in self-reliance. It doesn't want me integrated with God. It wants me separated from God. It wants to do things alone rather than going with God. It wants, we had a sponsor, Scott and I, says it wants to live in the wreckage of the future and lead with paranoia. That's what it does. Or it's remorse and regret about the past. And so when these folks would bring meetings in, I wasn't listening. I wasn't there yet. And I couldn't make myself listen. I couldn't make myself surrender. I couldn't make myself be teachable. But there's something called a gift of desperation that beats us into a state of reasonableness. Well, I didn't even know what was going on. But something shifted somewhere during the first few months of getting sober. And I have to say, I kind of was aware of it when I was in Minnesota, which was a continuation of treatment 7 days. You need to get out of New York. This is bad for you. And off I went. And what God starts to do, and this is just his mercy and love and just his greatness, that he little by slowly shut off the ears to the mind and opened up the ears to the soul. And the thing about work, living in 10 and 11, not just maintaining and keeping as is, but cultivating this, enhancing this, is that I can continue to live out of the soul and not the mind. I can continue to have the ears to the soul open and get soul food. Now, I'm going to stumble and fall. I was talking to a guy earlier today, called me up. He was a little jammed up. And we can stumble over our own feet when things are looking really good. It's just the human condition, broken and flawed. And I gave him some suggestions, and I asked him a question. When things are going really well and you're traveling light and there's enough money in the bank account and she loves you and the car looks good and everything's good, do you go to God with the same intensity for a thank you as I go to God with please help me? Because sometimes I can go to God, like my back's against the wall, you get, and I'm praying really hard. I'm sweating bullets in prayer. Please take this cup from me. Make this pass. It's too much for me. And then all of a sudden the bank account gets fat. I have my own business. She loves me. The kids are good. Everything's good. The palm tree's good. The beach is good. The water's good. Everything's good. And I don't go to God. I just kind of roll with it. Almost an arrogance and a sense of entitlement that I deserve this. Almost an arrogance and a sense of entitlement that I do not deserve to have a difficult day or a challenge in my life. Because I'm in AA now. I'm beyond all of that. I've transcended life circumstances. Well, I might transcend some of my alcoholism, but life is life. And Marion Sponce always says, life's in session. It's going to happen. You get the phone call, a friend passed away. You were sitting in a meeting with them the night before. Or a family member gets sick. Or that job that you were building your future around, suddenly there's not the company, is gone. How do I navigate through adversity? And in adversity, the mind will look to deny the existence of something greater. That's what it does. I need to take over now. God failed. And it seems to be, and there's an author, a gentleman, Thomas Merton, talks a lot about this, that when we're in our most weakest moment, in our darkest spot, is when we find most of God's strength and most of God's light. And the reason why that happens, because I got nothing at that point. It's a realization that I have nothing and I have to rely on something that is something, and that power is God. And suddenly I find this God, and it makes me take a look at how often during my day that I'm relying upon me. I'm doing things apart from God. And one thing about the mind, when I'm untreated, it makes me feel like I'm apart from God rather than a part of God. There is, you know, I was under the impression for a long time there's me and God, and there's a distance between the two, and you wake up to the fact that you can't be separate from that power which you're already connected to. It's like saying my hand isn't connected to my arm. And the freedom, the liberation is waking up to that the breath I'm taking is not me taking it. And that requires some solitude, some some communion with God to really touch that and not get up, you know, become Moses for a half hour and get up off my knees and go into Rambo mode. I mean, it's got to be one or the other. I thought I was Moses on my knees a few times, got my car hit 95, I turned into Rambo, it's all out the window. So it's really important for me to understand the importance of what 10 and 11 are talking about here. I can't be checking the boxes at this point. And hopefully by this point, I know it was for me that the realization that I like the effect produced by what's going on here. I like the effect produced by God. I like being around godly folks and talking about God. I don't mean holy rollers where they're ramming a Bible down your throat. I've come to accept those folks too. They're passionate. But just have that common thing, like-minded folks, where God isn't a bad word, nor is inventory or a 10-step. So before I get going, I always like to do this with step 10. We read how it works at most of our AA meetings, and we read it so many times, and we hear it so many times, you stop hearing it. You know, you check in your phone, or you're getting a cup of coffee, you're just daydreaming, thinking about what we're going to eat at the diner as soon as this meeting's over, and they're reading Rarely Have We Seen a Person Fail. And it's really great stuff. It's great information. It's needed to be talked about. But I always think about what if we had someone sitting in the meeting that night doesn't know when this thing's going to be lifted. I drink no matter what. I'm thinking about a drink. I'm thinking about getting high. I'm thinking about a drink. I'm thinking about getting high. When is this going to finally get away from me? Or am I stuck with this? And I got to battle this thing every single day. And my knees are starting to wobble. When does it get off my back? There's Joe in the back there with 20 years, and he just says he doesn't think about drinking anymore, and I'm consumed with it, about hurting myself. And then we sit with that same guy, and perhaps if I was the mayor of AA, we would not read how it works. We would read the following to this new person sitting there, that we cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Because when I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking. There's a battle going on. Don't drink. Don't drink. All right, one more time. No, I can't do it. Just a little taste. I'll get a bump, something. And there's a battle. I'm never okay. We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. So I'm not even wrestling with people in my mind anymore. I mean, you know, we can sit on the couch and look out the window. Everything looks good. And suddenly we're at war with people who died 20 years ago. We're going to get them back. You know, or we're looking into the future. If he shows up tonight, I've got a couple of things I'm going to say to him. And if that business meeting, they start and they want to bring a big book format in, I'm going to war with that. And we do this all day long. Then we walk into the meeting. How you doing? I'm wonderful. Anyone drive to this meeting alone in their car tonight? Anyone alone in their car? A few people. You weren't alone in the car. It's an honest program. If you think about if you replay the ride over here and listen to all the people we're talking to in the car when we think we're alone, we got about 40 people in the back seat. Arguing with them, getting along with them, you know, the whole thing. And then when we leave the meeting tonight and we're feeling really like spiritual, those 40 people are in the back seat going, what kind of nonsense is this? A whole hour in this joint? You know, and they're back again. You know, I go into Rambo mode. So I cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time, sanity will have returned. Back in step two, we're looking to get to a place called sanity. They delivered the package here. Sanity has returned, which means I have wholeness of mind, one with God. I'm living in the truth, not the problem. And when I'm in that place, I'm not drinking. I'm not taking non-conference approved dry goods. I'm not acting out. I'm okay. I'm whole. And I'm experienced oneness with God because I'm truly in his light. I will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I remember I was sitting in a restaurant in Brooklyn, and they ordered dessert. And it was ordered for me, actually, and I took a little piece of it, and I forget what kind of Italian pastry it is, and I immediately tasted a liqueur in it. I forget what it's called. I went, oh, my God, I got to get a white chip. I'm in trouble. And I didn't order more cake, and they found me in the back with a straw in the cake. It wasn't like that. I got rid of it. There was liqueur in there. I forget what the heck it's called. And I remember I called my sponsors. I was having dessert. I took a piece. I got rid of it. I said, okay, just keep moving. You know, sometimes you'll pick up what you think is a club soda and it's something else. That's recoiling from it as a hop. That's being done for me. Because prior to that, I'm looking for something all the time. You know, when you walk in a room, they look like they get high. I should get over there. You can smell a dope fiend. You know, I'll be seldom interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally, and I find, here it is. I find that this has happened automatically. Already, they're starting to get into, I don't have to think the drink through, play to take the end, and keep it green, remember where I come from. Because if that implies self-reliance, and I might get to the place where, not that bad. I can't solve a problem with the mind that creates the problem. The part of me that creates the problem is not where I'm going to for the solution. It goes on to tell me this. I will see my new attitude toward liquor has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. Every once in a while, I go to the car wash. I prefer washing a car on my own. But every once in a while, I'll pull into the car wash. And the car's dirty. It rains down here. You get that layer of dirt on your car. And I pull in, and the attendant is always there. And they always look mean, by the way. And he usually does this, turn right, turn left, pull forward. You hear click. Put it in neutral. I let go. And about 3 or 4 minutes later, my car looks wonderful. It's all clean. I didn't do anything. I just followed directions and then let go. And this machine does all the stuff. It cleans the tire. All they do is dry it off and I drive away. The car sounds better out of a car wash. You ever notice that car sounds really good? And what I'm doing here is I've done a bunch of stuff. And God's taking over completely. He's grabbing the wheel. I don't have to do a lot of heavy lifting here. In fact, as I said a moment ago, by the time I get to step 10, I like the effect produced by God so much. It's a get to. I get to do this. I get to do a 10 step. I get to share with others. I get to pray. I get to do this. Not like I have to. I better do this because I really enjoy the effect produced by it. So God is beginning to do, is doing this stuff for me. It says, I will see that my new attitude toward liquor has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it, neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't even sworn off, and here's recovered. Instead, the problem has been removed. That's a place called recovered. Am I still in a... The problem has been removed, but the truth about the problem will always be with me. Once an alky, always an alky. But I'm not being hunted down by this thing anymore. There's space between me and this thing called alcoholism. It doesn't mean I won't go backwards through the steps and pick up a drink again if I'm not continuing to grow in understanding the fact that there's a hook here. But at this moment, I've been set free of me. Because after the booze is removed, the person, the thing I got to get away from, the person I got to stay away from is me. I think I said a couple of weeks ago, page 62, which pretty much describes me, what I'm up against, alcoholism, selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, doesn't mention alcohol once. I got to get as far away from me as possible. And it seems to the less of me, the more God I'm experiencing. I'm not fighting it, neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't even sworn off the stuff, except instead the problem has been removed. And they go on to say this, it does not exist for us. Imagine sitting with someone in an AA meeting who's getting pushed around by alcoholism, doesn't know if they're going to make it till midnight, and saying, this ain't working. When is this going to end? I can't take the pressure. My head's going to explode. When is this going to be lifted from me? And then we read this to them, that it will be. We guarantee you it will be, because if it wasn't, none of us would be here. But there's some stuff I need to do prior to that. That's disconnect from me, connect with you, and connect with God. And that's what 129's about to do when I start off. I'm going to get unhooked from me. I'm going to start to connect to you in 8 and 9. And somewhere in that process, I wake up and I'm connected to this God. I'm integrated, not separated from God. Here's the alternative. And I've learned all this through just screwing up and making mistakes. That if I'm not careful, if I'm not addressing my daily inventory, if I'm not constantly doing what needs to be done with 10 and 11, my thought life, which is not going anywhere, it can almost go dormant. We get some space between it. We start to recognize, like, who is this? Who's this person talking to me? That starts to become reality. My thought life will create my current reality. I know because I've been there. See, they're my thoughts. I believe they're my thoughts. And because I believe they're my thoughts, they must be true, which gives them power. Now, if you were sitting with me and I told you some of the stuff going on in my head, you would say, Pete, that's crazy. There's no boogeyman in the closet. But if you had those thoughts, you would say, there is a boogeyman in the closet because they're your thoughts. And you ever notice when that stuff hits, like 3 days later, we forget why we even were angry or sad about it? Or afraid of? What I was? I don't remember. But in that moment, it's paramount. How could I possibly practice love and tolerance, which is a code in step 10, if I'm consumed with me all the time? If I'm trying to arrange life to suit me? If everyone would only do as I want? It's all self-reliance. I'll pray when it gets bad, but when other than that, I really don't need to pray that much. I feel good. And I gauge my spiritual walk on how I feel physically. You know, sometimes you just wake up and you just feel really good. Or maybe in the middle of the day, you ever get that where you just feel, I feel really happy and pretty cool right now. You know, nothing's changed, just feel really good. I equate that with spiritual fitness. The same way I can equate getting grace for spiritual fitness. It's two different walks. And the way I can just feel elated about nothing and just feeling really happy, really good, I can go the opposite way to same people, same circumstances, I'm just not there today. That's a lousy way to gauge spiritual fitness. I have to look at the overall picture, am I traveling light or not, and what am I doing? How much chopping wood and carrying water am I doing here? Am I writing inventory? Am I speaking to? Am I accountable to a sponsor? Do I have a support group? Am I sponsoring men? How transparent am I? I tell Marion one thing, Ava another, and Scott another. That's not transparent. I'm a fraud. I still got my I'm leading with ego here. I just want to look good in front of everyone. I'll give you a couple little stories so you don't think I'm that good, but I got to come out shining well here. That's lousy. That's traveling heavy. That's in bondage of self. I'll tell you this. One of the things that got me kind of free. Scripture says we don't cast our pearls before swine. And our big book says, in a general way, what we were like, what happened we're like now. But I've gotten to a point where, generally speaking, I'm not so attached to others' opinions of me. It's nice when people say, we like you. It's nice when people applaud after you're done pouring your heart out from a podium. It's nice when people wait in line and thank the speaker, and you happen to be the speaker. It's nice when your neighbor says, good morning, Pete, good to see you. But if I'm going to get attached and hooked into that so I get some sort of sense of well-being, I'm in trouble. And I've gotten to a place... I wasn't always this way, where if you're not too thrilled to see me, I mean, I'm going to keep riding my horse. I mean, I'm not getting off. You know, that's freedom. The other freedom is this, that how broken and flawed I am. When I came into AA, you went through the steps. Oh, I'm perfect. Now I'm going to levitate any minute. Just watch. But how broken and flawed I am, the human condition. I'm the car that leaks oil. When it drives it, when I drive away, there's an oil spot on the ground. If Pete was here. What tremendous liberation at that. I don't need to be perfect in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a room full of broken toys. Everyone's got their brokenness. But isn't the cool thing how God designed it? Because what do? We identify with our brokenness when we share with each other. We get it. I mean, I've said this from a million podiums. I say my name is Peter, I'm an alcoholic. You say my name is Marion, I'm alcoholic. We already know each other. Different stories, different flavors, different turns, different twists and things like that. But as soon as you say you're alcoholic, I got you. You're afraid of your own shadow a lot of times. Because so am I. You know something's lurking around the corner and there's no one there. And you can get $1 million and be really happy. You get $1 million and still be miserable. I get it. And the thing we're always going to happen, if one of us pick up a drink, we're going to have a second drink. Got it. And then we just tell stories about how we got here. It says it's easy to let up on my spiritual program of action and rest on my accomplishments of yesterday. I'm headed for trouble if I do, because alcohol is a subtle foe. So what the mind wants to do is say, hey, you did enough work. Put the car in neutral and cruise for a while. Let the newcomer make coffee. Let the newcomer set up the room. You don't need to do any. Just chill. Sit in the back. You're good. I feel good. And then what I start to do is chase comfort. And I can't let anything upset my serenity, the arrogance behind that. Hey, I was in a meeting in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn years ago, and a wet one came in. And there were a couple of women in the front. I go, oh, my God, he's drunk. I'm saying, yeah, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. They come in drunk. I mean, where else are you going to go? And this one guy was loud. He was obnoxious. And this woman got up. She says, I'm going to a different meeting. I'm not letting anyone upset my serenity. You're on the wrong fellowship. Yeah. The things I'm looking for to be comfortable could be the very same things that'll take me further away from God that can get me in trouble. I'm seeking comfort rather than spiritual joy. I'm seeking comfort at all costs. I need to be comfortable. And that usually means more of something. Usually. But I'm an alcoholic. No matter how much more I get, I still need more. Then what I begin to do is isolate. I start to distrust people. And then isolation brings a lot of pain and suffering. I could be in a room full of 100 people. I'm isolating. And I'm little by slowly, if you could just see the figuratively speaking, stepping away from you, stepping away from God. Now I'm in bondage. Now I'm in pain and suffering and bondage, and I know what this mind's going to tell me to do to alleviate that is pick up a drink. Once a drunk, always a drunk. I got to take a look at how far away from step one I've really gotten. What does my prayer life look like in life of meditation and helping others? How far away have I gotten from that? One of the things we did, I was brought up this way in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people do it, some people don't. We call them 10 steps. My sponsor started me on what he called a 10th step. I didn't even do a 4th step yet. I'm not saying you have to do this. I'm just here to show you what was brought to me, and I still do them. So we have a 4-column inventory, and I've shown how to do that. If I have a resentment at 9 o'clock in the morning about something or a fear at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to wait till maybe 10 o'clock tonight when I retire at night and deal with it then. No, it gives me some really cool instructions. It says, when these crop up, selfish, dishonest, resentment, and fear, I ask God at once. My first move is always turn in order to go out. Turn in order to go out. I turn into God. I discuss it with someone immediately. I make amends quickly if I've harmed someone. I see who I can be of service to. Love and tolerance is my code. What my sponsor had me do was write it out when I could. Not steal time away from work. But soon as I can, I would sit down and write this inventory. I'm resentful at someone for this. I'm fearful about that. You know what? It cleaned up the eraser board a whole lot. So when it came time to retiring at night, I don't have a whole day all over me, and I'm not waking up Tuesday wearing Monday. Bill talks about the emotional hangover in the 12 and 12. I found I travel a lot lighter. And some of the things I would put on paper, I was embarrassed to put on paper. I says, I should be beyond this. I should be beyond jealousy or envy. I should be on even experiencing the resentment, but there it is in paper. It's funny how God becomes, you know, the pen becomes a spiritual translator like it did in 4. It's happening in 10. And so I take a look at, do I owe someone an amends after this inventory? Yeah, I do. Maybe I don't. But I'm clean. I'm walking clean. I'm a hollow bone rather than toxic. Now, when I'm like that, I can hear better and I can see better. I'm operating from a different place. It goes on to tell me, every day is a day must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I best serve you, God? Your will not mine be done. Here's a command that these thoughts must go with me constantly. And I can exercise my willpower along this line, all we wish, it's proper use of the will. What's the difference between my will and God's will? I get that all the time. We all get that. What's the difference between my will and God's will spreads love. My will doesn't. It constricts it. And I'll tell you why. I could sound loving, I can look loving, but as a motive, I'm getting paid off. Something good's going to happen for me. I'm not too really concerned with you. I'll pretend I'm concerned with you, but I better get my just desserts. God's will, I'm not really, it's not about me. It's about just bringing joy to other people. The thing about God's will, it's not just for me. God's love is not just for me. It's contagious. That's when we know we're in the light. You want to be around those folks. You want to talk to those folks. You want to know what meetings they're going to. It's contagious. When I'm full of my will, you don't want to be around me. Nice talk, but have a nice day. Nice to see you at a meeting, but I'm not going to the diner with you. We were talking about a gentleman earlier who's passed on, this guy Don P. from Colorado. He was that guy. When he walked in a room, he said, I got to get around. I don't know why. I got to sit near him. You have a fancy house and a fancy car and fancy jewelry, and I have a Rolex watch. And he wasn't Gucci on the outside and Walmart on the inside. He was just Don, who lived in this light. So for me, I have found that there's no security in my future apart from God. What am I doing with this power? How free do I want to be? I had a sponsor, Mark, used to always ask us, how free do you want to be? I go to an ocean with a thimble. I come home with a thimble full of water, and God's given me the whole thing. How free do I want to be? I don't have to do this perfect. None of us do. I haven't met a perfect person yet. We're going to stumble and fall. There's times where I don't want to write inventory. I'm too tired. I don't want to look at self. I don't want to look at me. You pick up the pen and you write and you discuss. And as I'm navigating through the day, how am I doing? Something happens, I want to jump in there, a little good gossip. It's good gossip. It's not bad gossip. It's good gossip. I just want to offer my opinion on this. I have no experience with it, but I think I'll just chip in a little bit. And that little voice says, what are you doing? You know, it's my God voice. Sounds like he's from Brooklyn, I know. I was driving to the airport. I was living in Boca at the time, and I'm driving to the airport in Fort Lauderdale and headed to Texas. A lot of friends in Texas. I love going to Texas. Great folks down there. And as I'm driving to the airport from Boca to Fort Lauderdale, it's a beautiful, beautiful morning. I mean, you know, there's no clouds, and the sky's got that blue, just all blue. And I realize I'm leaving Marion behind again on another weekend. This is before she was traveling with me. And I'm going to miss a beach weekend again. I've been on the road for at this time 6 weekends in a row. I said, what are you doing? What are you, Mr. AA now? You know? And it started. The thought stream. Here comes restless and discontented. They're cousins. Why am I doing this? I don't believe it. You know, the airport, Fort Lauderdale's a zoo. It's going to be crowded. It's just going to be messy. But you ever notice you get to the airport, you're nice, right out of a shower. By the time you get to your seat in the plane, you need another shower. It's just, yeah, right? It's just like icky. Why am I doing this? I want to go home. Then I'm thinking I'll text them. I'll lie. I'll tell them something came up. I can't make it. And out of nowhere, the truth showed up. And it was like, who are you listening to? Who is this person talking to you right now? What is going on? I was back. I get to the airport. There were issues at the airport. I think I was on taking United at the time. And this woman is frantic. She's just trying to please people. They're hollering and they're barking and all this other stuff. And I says, are you okay? She said, I can't wait for this day to be over. It's been a really, really bad morning. And I realize she's now listening to the same guy I was on the way to the airport. Yeah. I get to get unhooked from that on most days. I love my prayer life and meditative life. I love doing a 10-step. All my sponsors were pretty much very rigid with 10 steps. I've had sponsors. I'm not saying this is for everyone. If I call them up and say, I got a problem, they'd say, did you write the inventory? No, call me back when you have the inventory. I was undisciplined. They tried to discipline me to a spiritual life. And that's part of living in this light is I'm disciplined. Discipline, Marcus says, is the horse I ride. How free do I want to be? If I still want to be in charge of my recovery, I'm going to have my recovery. I'm going to have an individual program rather than what the book is talking about, yeah? So the biggest enemy I'll ever face is my mind. Well, what do I do with all of this stuff? I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I have a 10-step. I have a sponsor. I have people I share this with. I'm cleaning up the day as I'm going along. I'm doing a spot check inventory all along. Does it stop there? No. Because the evening's going to come and I need to close up the day. Am I closing up my day, or is my meditation at night gone by the board? Am I prayer gone by the board? Am I even checking on how I did? I used to have a notepad and pen in one room and my bed in another room. And sometimes, you know, you put your head on a pillow and you think of something and you're all like, you got that anxiety going on. And I got to get up and walk all the way to the other side of the house. I'll fight it off. So what I start doing is keeping a notepad and pen next to my bed. But I did that for years in case something came up. It's also an opportunity to pray some more, and I can never get enough prayer. But what I do at night is I give thanks to the day. Even if it was a difficult day, I was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago, and I'm laying in the hospital bed, which is just nasty. And I made my prayer. I couldn't do what I wanted to do. I had no books around me, but I thank God for the day anyway. My wife was with me. I was going to get out of the hospital. Just a matter of time. Everything was working fine except for this little glitch on the radar. And I couldn't wait to get back to you guys. All is well. So sometimes it backs against the wall, thank you, God. Sometimes I'm traveling light, thank you, God. But I have a nightly review that I do in a prayer meditative life that I work with. I have a life of meditation. It's really that important to me. You know? And I like to talk about it because I stop talking about what I believe in or not take a stand for what I believe in. I'll stop believing in it. I'll stop taking a stand for it. It'll be a thing of the past. And the 11th step says, be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. I have and I do. There was a time where I had some contempt about that. AA shouldn't mix with a religion. Well, that's not true. For some of us, it does. For some of us, it's two different walks. For some of us, they crisscross. Mine crisscross. There's three places on this planet that I am most comfortable and feel most safe. The first place is when I'm with my wife, when I'm in an AA meeting, and when I'm in my house of worship. Everything makes sense. I am safe and protected. When I'm in an AA meeting, life makes sense. When I go to church on Sunday, everything makes sense. And when I'm alone with my wife, everything makes sense. I didn't have any of that before I got here. And sometimes it's as simple as thank you, God, for those three things. I have a meeting I'm going to tomorrow. And when I get out of meeting, the next day shows up, where are we going tonight? Because I'm going to get around you. And my first response is, you can open up your top button. You can kick back. You can be in chill mode in an AA meeting. I have to be a big book guru. I can just show up with all my brokenness. My sponsor is called Angels with Dirty Faces. So I have a nightly practice that I do. I work with lots of books. But I was told, don't read spiritual books. And I looked at my sponsor like, how could you not read a spiritual book? He says, work with them. Study them. Meditate on them. I've been able to do that. And I really, it's a thing I love doing. In fact, most of the folks I listen to, there's a handful of AAs that I listen to. Most of those guys have passed on. There's a couple still with us that I enjoy listening to. And I've heard the talk a billion times. It just talks to the soul. Marion sponsors one of them. I can listen to this woman speak forever. But most of the stuff I read and listen to is what we call non-AA. They're spiritual folks on a spiritual walk. And my soul responds to it. Like when we're not in an AA meeting, you ever notice when we're not in an AA meeting, somebody says something and you kind of do that AA nod thing? Yeah. It's like a reaction. The soul is acknowledging what it always knew. It finally got the truth. It's hearing the truth. Is that a conclusion of mine? We say, oh, that's pretty good. I'm going to use that at my home group, make believe it's mine. That's different. Yeah. Yeah. My own awakening, that's evolved over time. And I guess it'll always be evolving. It looks nothing like it did when I first started, but it does. I mean, the first time I was asked to meditate, I was put on a 2-minute timer. And it felt like eternity. And in 2 minutes, I touched how loud I am, how much noise and static I got in the head trying to get quiet for 2 minutes. Oh, my God, it was a train wreck in there. Got to be here, got to do this, got to do this, got to do that. And it just went on and on and on and on. All these plans and designs. My little plans and designs seem to be paramount. But over time, little by slowly, you chop wood, carry water. 2 minutes becomes 5 minutes, becomes 7 minutes, becomes 10 minutes, and then we're off the timer. And then we're in. We got this thing we got to get to. I get to meditate. So on awakening, I'm an early riser. 5 o'clock I'm up, sometimes earlier. I think I've shared this many times here. There's been times, but I've been awakened at like 3 a.m. There's no problems on the horizon. It's like, oh, my God, wake up at 3. Oh, my God, got to be a court today. I'm full of energy. I'm ready to roll. I want to roll over and go back to sleep, but I can't. I wake up. And I go into my little prayer room, and I stop prayer, my meditation, which is what I do now. I don't read until I'm done with this. There's some things I read when I'm done with prayer and meditation. I used to do all the reading before. It's what works for me now. And then I pray, and I sit in about 15, 20-minute meditation, and I got some stuff I read. Put on a pot of coffee. Meditation was fine. The prayer was fine. Maybe I'm just, you know, folding some laundry and just tidying up the house, getting the house nice so when Marion wakes up, it looks nice and clean. And then bang, something happens. And then sometimes bang, something happens in meditation. There's a gentleman who said, the morning breeze has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. I take a nap later and get to bed early that night. But I might be missing something. Because the big book is the treasure map, not the treasure. And so there's a lot waiting for me that God's always looking to give, always looking to feed the soul. I just have to be up. It's not on my clock, though. Well, God, between 8 and 4, I'm good. After that, leave me alone. You know, he doesn't have a watch. And he loves us so much, he may want to get us up at 3 or 3:30 just to hang out and something will happen. And I'll tell you, every time God has done that for me, it's changed my life. It wasn't something, oh, well, that's pretty insightful. I like that. It's changed my course. It's given me a different point of view on everything. And it isn't something I have to go over, get a pen and paper and write it down, because God's thumbprint just got on your soul. It's with you. Like, my name is Peter Marinelli. God tells me something. I know what it said. There's depth and weight behind what he just gave me. I'm not that good. I never went to college. I have no degree. I'm not an AA guru. But God doesn't care about that. All he cares about is the soul. And when I'm hungry enough, he's going to feed it. It's just not on my time. Not what I want. Now's good. He sees the ground's fertile. We're going to grow right now. And it's life-changing. It's mood-altering. It's revolutionary. It's transforming, all of it. So I go back because I like the effect produced by it. When I'm in that place, there's no thought of drink or drug or acting out in any other way. There just isn't. We could, you know, getting a resentment is I pick up a drink. Marion sponsors, you pick up a drink called jealousy. You pick up a drink called self-pity. You pick up a drink called envy. You pick up a drink called sloth. When I'm in God's light, that stuff stays away from me. That's why it feels light. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why I have to pause because I'm agitated or doubtful through the day, you know when it talks about that? Isn't it funny how step 10 and 11 kind of crisscross? Why does the book tell me agitated to pause? If I'm doubtful, pause. I can be agitated and doubtful or agitated and doubtful. Book says pause. Pause doesn't mean take a beat and keep moving. Pause can be let's wait a few days on this. Let's do nothing. The reason why I have to pause because I'm agitated or doubtful, I have found out from my own experience, because I'm trying to control or get my hands on life again. So I'm agitated. You're not moving fast enough. You're not giving me what I want. They're not doing what I want. So I'm starting to get agitated and doubtful. And the doubtful is, oh my God, it's going to have an impact on me that I don't like. So I squeeze harder. Book says, just pause. God always wins. God always wins. And I want to be on his team. So some of it's self-sacrifice, if you will. Plain old sacrifice. It's not on my terms anymore. It's on God's terms. And I'm not going to hide him in the closet and be afraid to talk about him. I don't care what meeting I'm at. This is just for me. He brought me in here, gave me a new life. I'm not going to talk about him because it may not be popular. That's what the world out there is doing right now. The little shape we're in. So I get an opportunity, a newcomer. I'm not going to hide God from a newcomer. I'm just not. They're dying. They're bleeding to death in front of me. I'm going to hold back a tourniquet because it might hurt them. I'm not going to do that. Again, that's for me. That might change. Who knows? But that's where I'm at. So for me, and I just realized I ran 10 right into 11. I don't know how we got there, but here we are. I've had incredible experiences for me, and I know I've heard a lot of stories, you have too, with the results of having a prayer life and a life of meditation. It has answered riddles in my life. A lot of, if you're like me, you come into a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of things that, why did this happen? I don't know how come it turned about this way? What happened here? And we search and we try to find out, you can't. When God says now, then we find out. And once that's resolved, I'm traveling light. See, there's tremendous amount of freedom in getting to do what I want to do. I want to go to this meeting. I want to wear this jacket. I want to buy that car. I want to meet this person. There's tremendous freedom in that. There's even more freedom in knowing what not to do. And one of the things I know what not to do is avoid this walk. It seems to be when I'm praying and meditating, doing these things, the heart is open and God can feed it. And some of the experience I've had along the journey this past 36 years have changed the course of my life. Knowing that I'm known by my Creator is the best way to put it. Knowing that I'm known by my Creator. I'm not better than anyone in this room or in AA. I'm not a spokesman for AA. I'm not less than anyone. I'm a spoke in a huge wheel. That spoke is precious to God. And so a lot of the riddles and the unanswered questions got resolved in the practice of meditation. And going into the meditation, I didn't know this was going to happen. Okay, prayer, now we go meditate. You try to sit in a posture, work with breath, and you're breathing in and breathing out. And 2 minutes turns into 5 minutes. And somewhere in there, what unbeknownst to me, God says, now, I'm going to fetch you up and off we go. We're going to go someplace. I'm going to answer some things for you. And we're in that place, we're not even aware we're sitting in a meditation. Time and space is gone. Can't make it happen. Not in control of that. It's just the unexplainable God. See, when the third step says, God, as I understand him, my conception of God, but I need to understand, I will never understand God. But I can experience it. So a lot of those things that I came in with in 1988 have been resolved. Do I still doubt? Yep. Faith is good as the container it's in. The container you're looking at has holes in it. Do I still doubt God? Yes. Do I have skepticism? Yeah. Overall, no. But there's moments of doubt and skepticism. The carpenter was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he had moments of doubt and skepticism. He was sweating blood. Please make this cup pass. He was doubting. Do you think when I come along with the high school education, I'm not going to doubt? I'm from Brooklyn. I doubt everybody. But God knows that. It's part of my brokenness. And he picks me up and puts me where I'm supposed to be. And it's always smooth sailing when I'm in God's light. Prayer, meditation, being quick to see where religious people are right, cleaning up the wreckage of my past, making amends where I've harmed somebody, you know, being the best example of this book I can be. Not the perfect example, just the best that I can be at that moment. Broken and all, warts and all. It seems to work because another drunk gets that. And God hired me, hired us, if I can be so bold, to go get some of his kids who lost their way and bring them in here. They're not going to be too interested in us talk of spiritual discoveries on the first meeting. They want to know, what did you do? And are you like me? I tell them I'm like you, then I tell them what I did. Now I could talk about God freely. And I bring them in, feed them a cup of coffee, next thing you know, in 3 months or 6 months, they're sponsoring somebody. And another life is saved. That's all I got. Peace.
Let's thank Peter one more time. I have a secretary's report from Ryan.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. As the baskets are going around, I've asked Rachel to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in AA identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. So let's welcome up Rachel.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Great. 1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back into his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75%+ success rate. Does anybody need a sponsor? If you could raise your hand. No, everybody's got one. If you're too shy, just come stand awkwardly up here and someone will come talk to you. Can the recovered alcoholics raise your hand? Awesome. If your hand's not up, then talk to someone whose hand is. This is also the last meeting of the month. Is anybody celebrating a year or more? Did anybody celebrate in the month of August that we can recognize? Yeah.
August
21st,
it was 34 years.
Nice. Anybody else for August? No? Awesome. All right, we have a couple announcements. Intergroup is where you can buy AA-related literature and medallions. Intergroup is also responsible for creating our where and when and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. Broward County Institutions Committee is responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an AA meeting, such as jails, detoxes, and rehabs. They meet monthly to organize the meeting schedules at the 12-step house. Is anybody here a member of BCIC? Awesome. If you need any information, you can see Kelly after the meeting. Next. Did that one. Second gratitude dinner planning meeting is going to be this Saturday. Okay, that was old. All right. Our Monday night meeting, the big book, primary purpose big book study, we just started back at the beginning of the book, so this is definitely a good time to come check that out. It starts at 7:15 in the same room. And then we have Peter for three more sessions, so I'm really looking forward to hear what he has to say. So come check it out again next week. And that is that. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale on the piano in the back. If you're interested in any of that, just see any home group member. And we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask you to be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thanks. See you next week.
Tonight's session and all past speaker podcasts
at alcoholicsandgod.org. Again, if you'd like to come to Monday, it's upstairs here. Mondays at 7:15. And for those of you that like to thank our speaker tonight, please line up down the center aisle. We're going to close with the Lord's Prayer seated. If you don't know it, it's up on the screen here. Our Father,
who art in heaven,
can't get it right. It doesn't matter. just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man.
When you laughing, bah, 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 when you laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying, the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope thank you.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? Long Shine a light on me tonight.
Oh, thank you very much.